Next case is 04-261, Sandusky Dock Corporation versus Christopher Jones. Ms. Bry.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Diane Bry, here on behalf of the Director of Environmental Protection.
Would you pull that microphone closer to yourself, please? We can't hear you.
Sorry. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The decision below improperly took away one of the director's statutory tools to combat excessive air pollution. The 10th District's decision that the director must issue an enforcement order under Division R of 3704.03 before he may modify a facility's permit under Division G of that statute is wrong for two reasons. First, it's
unsupported. Can you just help me? I read all these briefs and I'm still a little confused on when G is used and when R is used by EPA. I read, read the language, but it seems as if there's a practice here that we need to be told about.
Your Honor, the director uses Division G, which deals with permitting generally, not only when he's issuing a permit, but when he would be modifying a permit to reflect additional legal requirements or other changes in circumstances. That's Division G. Division R, the enforcement order provision, gives him more specific authority to tell a facility you must do this or you must do thus and so to abate a particular problem.
Is R used when a facility may not have a permit?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And it can be used also when a facility has a permit but is not complying with the conditions of the permit. Is that correct?
That's correct. R can cover both. And because R can cover unpermitted facilities as well as permitted facilities, it shows one of the reasons why the General Assembly would have given the director two avenues to address air pollution. With an unpermitted facility, let me go back to the permitted facilities. Through a permit process, whether it's initial or modification, there's going to be some back and forth between the director and the facility. There'll be some opportunity for exchange of information. In many instances, the parties agree on what's going to be in the final permit. Not necessarily on every term, of course. That's why you have the appeal provision after the permit action. But there is that opportunity for an exchange. So the General Assembly could very well have concluded that there's no need for any additional legal hurdle for the director to overcome here, as there is with when he's issuing an enforcement order.
Was there a modification to the permit here, in your view?
Yes, there was, Your Honor.
And the modification was 13 minutes per hour, am I correct?
That is correct.
What was it prior to the modification?
The facility's original permit did not specify that standard because the facility had not, at that juncture, been determined to be a nuisance. What triggered the application of the 13-minute standard automatically was when the director found the facility to be a nuisance. That under the regulations for control measures and for visible emissions, I'll refer to them as 1708 and 1707 rather than the long form.
Counsel, prior to that, though, the facility had installed a multi-million dollar mechanism for dealing with this emission problem.
That's
correct. State of the art?
It was state of the art.
And that was done in conjunction with the EPA and got the EPA's blessing for the use of that in order to facilitate the original permit. Is that correct?
That's correct. They installed that and then got their original permit.
And they were operating for some time using that state of the art equipment.
That's correct. They certainly had it. I should say they had it installed since I think it was 1996.
Okay, and we would presume that it was in use.
It certainly was used, as the investigator found here and the director found. They didn't find that it was being used consistently or correctly. The investigator, when she went on site, saw the coal piles, saw the coal dust blowing off the piles and saw some of the water sprayers. One instance, she saw it on for a couple of minutes. Another instance, she saw it spraying but not hitting the top of the piles, which it would have needed to do to keep the coal from becoming airborne. So there was a real concern here that this facility wasn't doing all that it could do, even though it had the equipment, that it just needed to use it.
Well, isn't that even a basis then, based on this information you're telling us, for some sort of finding with the evidentiary component to it, the use of the state-of-the-art equipment as opposed to merely testimony from the marina and the sailboat owners, et cetera, that there was damage to their property?
If I understand Your Honor's question, are you saying they that they should have done more in the hearing? And before the Environmental Review Appeals Commission, they looked specifically at the issue of nuisance, and they took the testimony of the investigator, looked at her report, which is in the record, and also looked at the complaints that various owners.
And then the director came up with the solution of only 13 minutes per hour for the operation of this facility. Is that correct?
Well,
as opposed to if they had the study done on the economic impact and the feasibility, maybe a more appropriate use of this state-of-the-art equipment as opposed to a limitation on the production or the facility's operation.
Your Honor, the director modified the permit here to reflect the application of the 13-minute rule about which Sandusky complains, because when a facility is found by the director to be a nuisance, the 13-minute rule applies automatically under the rule. So that comes in.
And that's the only solution possible, is the 13-minute rule.
Well, there were other items in the permit that talked about how they would operate the equipment, but the director modified the permit here because, as he said in the permit, if you do these things, we think your existing equipment will be a reasonably available control measure as required by the rule. We think if you do these things, you're not going to have any more nuisance violations. So,
but you still have the 13-minute rule to abide by. And isn't that the crux of their complaint, is that it's not economically feasible to be burdened with this 13-minute automatic penalty?
Yes, that is the crux of their complaint. Our response to that is, when somebody is found to be a nuisance, the 13-minute rule is going to apply in any event. That's what the standard is. The director,
no matter what the evidence is, no matter what the facts are, we're just going to impose the 13-minute rule.
The director, when he promulgated the rules dealing with permitting and particularly dealing with the 13-minute rule, he was required to consider how these rules would affect compliance, how that would affect benefit the people in the state, and the costs that would be associated with that compliance. So in a general way, when he promulgated that 13-minute rule and the control measure requirements, he did consider those the benefits and the costs generally of requiring such a standard to maintain air quality.
Did he consider that pursuant to Sandusky Dock or just in the creation and the application of this rule?
In the creation of the application
of
the rule,
but not specifically to Sandusky Dock. There was no feasibility or economic impact information given.
He didn't formally consider that, to be sure. However, it's clear that they had the equipment already on site, they had installed it, and that requiring them to use it consistently seems pretty reasonable.
Counsel, let me just add. I'd like to take you back to the Chief's original question, we need some more information about the use of paragraph R versus paragraph G. Your answer, which was short as to the occasions in which you would use paragraph G, didn't seem to me to fit the fact pattern that we have here. So could you expand on what the practice is when confronted with a complaint? You've got two or three boat owners saying, my boat's getting dirty. You've got a facility here that's been operating for 100 years, moving huge amounts of coal. And instead of taking enforcement action under R, the director decides to change the permit. And the chief's question was, is that the way the department ordinarily operates? And so your explanation for when does the director go to G and skip over R?
The director goes to G and went to G in this instance because he believed that by modifying the permit and specifying, just take these measures, you will meet the law's requirements. You will succeed in complying with the law. It's a less onerous mechanism in terms of the back and forth that goes on with the permitting process than to have the director issue a direct order to a facility saying you must do this and you must do that. So he took that action really because he thought that would solve the problem here.
Less onerous to the agency? Because if he followed R, he'd have to look at the technical or the costs, correct? The cost section is found in R regarding nuisance abatement. Is that correct?
The cost
and that cost argument or that cost language is not specifically in G, the permit modification.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. It is not in G.
So it could be said that in this situation, by using G, the permitting process, you didn't have to consider costs because R is not being used at all.
Your Honor is correct. When you use a permitting change, as happened here under G, you don't need to look at formally the economic reasonableness and technological feasibility as you would under R and under some other sections.
So G is a unilateral approach to the problem, with the authority being vested with the EPA director. And R, you say, is burdensome, but it would require communication, discussion, evidentiary evaluation on both the permittee and the agency.
Oh, Your Honor, on the permit modification, in fact, the whole permitting process, I would not characterize as unilateral because there is, as there was here.
No, I'm not saying the whole permitting process. I'm just saying the implementation of Section G. It appears to be unilateral.
With the implementation of Section G, it gives the director some discretion to put some things in the permit without having the facility be able to go to court and argue about the economic reasonableness and technological feasibility. But that doesn't mean, of course, that when the General Assembly didn't include that requirement, that they were expecting that the director would be unreasonable. In fact, what he did here, as we noted, we don't think is unreasonable. It's just requiring them to use their existing equipment. It just means that in litigation, there's not going to be that other issue of litigating feasibility and reasonableness before you require a certain measure, which is appropriate here.
Why would the director that ever use R? If the director doesn't have to consider cost, doesn't have to consider reasonableness, and pretty much makes a unilateral decision, there's no reason to ever use R for the director unless it's an unpermitted person. I can't see any advantage to you to ever go to R because you don't have to consider all these issues that the legislature seems to say are required to put balance into this EPA process.
Your Honor, the director would use R not only when you have an unpermitted facility, but when you have a situation that the director considers to be more egregious, or for example, if he's already modified a permit to put some requirements in, and there's still a problem at a facility. In other words,
if somebody doesn't comply under the changes they made in G, then they might go to court and force it under R. But still, you are unilaterally making decisions that seems to be contrary to the whole purpose of R.
Well, Your Honor, the purpose of R, we think, is to give the director another tool to address a specific situation directly, to evade emissions or to address other situations. He uses that provision more rarely than he uses the permit modification. The permit modification is just to address things he thinks can be used, can be corrected through that process.
Is a hearing required under R? Hearing, an administrative hearing, not a challenge in court. Is there an administrative hearing required in R?
Both G and R have the ability for the facility to appeal to the Environmental Review Appeals Commission after the director's action.
But not an administrative hearing within EPA?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Under either G or R?
That's correct.
Right. Is R the only section that requires the cost-benefit analysis when there's an abatement complaint, for example. Is there any other statutory section that would require the director to make a cost-benefit analysis or consider, you know, the cost to the solution that they're suggesting?
There are, Your Honor. There are several sections that require that, which is another reason why it shows the General Assembly made a deliberate choice in not including it under the G provision. Not only does R include this language about technical feasibility and economic reasonableness, but Provision I of the statute dealing with installation of monitoring devices and Provision H of the statute dealing with variances also includes the same language. Additionally, in another permit modification provision under 6111.03, for water discharge permits, there for a permit modification, it includes specifically the requirement that Sandusky wants to incorporate here, and it was not. And that further confirms that when the General Assembly wants to include a specific requirement like this, it does so, and it does so by express language, and its choice not to do so here indicates that it was a deliberate choice to give the director a second option here to deal with excessive air pollution. Along those lines, the 10th District's reasoning that the written order language in G means that somehow the requirements of R had to be incorporated also is an error for several reasons. First, the provision in G makes no mention whatsoever of R. And second, the variance provision in Division H of the statute also includes almost the same written order language that appears in G. But it wouldn't make any sense under H to read R's requirements or the R order provision into H because H already has, the variance provision already has its own technical feasibility and economic reasonableness language. So that shows that the term written order doesn't mean that the legislature wanted to read R's provision into G just by using that.
You've used your time, Mr. Rice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lewis.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Martin Lewis, and I'm here today on behalf of Appalee Sandusky Dock Corporation. The crux of the director's argument is essentially contained in conclusion of Law 12 of the Environmental Review Appeals Commission's decision, in which the Environmental Review Appeals Commission said the director may modify a permit, impose an abatement requirement of no visible emissions except for 13 minutes in any 1 hour, regardless of whether it's technically feasible or economically reasonable to meet that emission limitation.
I assume it applies regardless of the direction of the wind also.
What's interesting in this situation is that had Sandusky Dock been allowed to present evidence at the hearing, they would have presented evidence from engineers, consultants, scientists, meteorological evidence regarding the impossibility of meeting that 13-minute rule under certain meteorological conditions. The dock sticks out onto Lake Erie, and many
Sandusky,
times of the year...
Sandusky Bay, actually.
Yeah, exactly, Your Honor. And oftentimes, given certain weather conditions, our position would be technically infeasible to meet that standard. And the director has argued that when you do these permits, you try to negotiate them, but there might be some terms and conditions that could be appealed if they're not agreed to. In this circumstance, the permit was unilaterally modified to include the term and condition of the 13-minute rule. And we did, in fact, appeal that to the Environmental Review Appeals Commission. But then upon appeal, the director made a motion to the Environmental Review Appeals Commission barring Sandusky Dock from putting on any evidence regarding technical feasibility and economic reasonableness.
Because the director was moving under G instead of R.
Correct. But in our view, that was somewhat kind of an end around on R, because R talks about orders to abate emissions, limit, prohibit emissions, require installation of pollution control devices. That is exactly what the 13-minute rule imposition was. It was a rule to prohibit emissions. And in our view, it's a violation of the statute, of the language and the intent, to proceed under G, but really issue an R order. But by doing so, the director could avoid looking at the technical feasibility, economic reasonableness.
Well, EPA says you already had the equipment. You put, in fact, installed the equipment, I guess, before you were required to by EPA. and they gave you a permit to operate the equipment, and EPA says all we are doing to Snetsky Dock is saying you have to use the equipment a little differently than you've been using it.
And our position, that's a question of fact. I mean, our position is that if we use the equipment to the maximum extent feasible, and that it was operated properly, it was maintained properly, it was used consistently and properly, we still cannot meet the 13-minute rule. Now, that's a question of fact that may be true, may not be true, but we were precluded from putting on any evidence pertaining to that. And moreover, the director is arguing that that's not even a consideration. And it's very critical.
Well, isn't his basis for that argument is that the fact that your facility was found to be a nuisance?
Yes, and our view is that there was an investigation held. The director made an investigation and did not find that there was any threat to public health or public safety, but they did find that there was damage to some individual boat in the adjacent marina. And we believe the director's remedy is he has the authority to make that investigation. He has authority to make the finding that there's probable cause there's a nuisance. But having found that probable cause that there was a nuisance, if then he decided to take a remedy, which would be an imposition of equipment to be used in a certain manner or a prohibition of emissions or an abatement, additional abatement, then that's exactly the language that's used in R. So his remedy, therefore, is to issue an order pursuant to R. But in so doing, he must take into effect the technical feasibility and economic reasonableness of the action. And G is a permit to operate provision. And a director can modify a permit. I mean, we're not saying that the director doesn't have the authority to modify the permit, but as the Court of Appeals pointed out, the last sentence of G says when the director revokes a permit, when he denies a permit, when he modifies a permit, he must issue an order stating the basis for doing so. And in this situation, where it involves the actual imposition of an emission limit, which is the 13-minute rule, that's certainly a situation where that order referred to in G is clearly the order in R.
So you're saying that G and R can really peacefully coexist?
Correct.
And
correct.
It's not an either-or situation?
That is exactly our position and the position of the Court of Appeals. These statutory provisions are not mutually exclusive. They should be read complementary. And consistently, and to further the intent of the General Assembly. And that's, we believe, what the Court of Appeals properly did.
But must they be read together? Can't the director just proceed under G since he found a nuisance and therefore the 13-minute rule automatically goes into effect and it's over? Does not have to refer then to R?
We believe that that's an improper view of the statute because it basically would eviscerate R. The meaning of R, because what would happen then is if he wanted to impose emission limitations and he didn't want to consider at all whether it's technically feasible to do so, he could then just basically, in the guise of a G modification, totally ignore R, which is what we think happened here. And this is so important for not only Sandusky Dock, but for everyone who has a permit, because the violation of any term and condition of a permit carries a fine of up to $25,000 per day. So by the logic of the director's argument here, what could happen is a emission limitation could be imposed unilaterally in a permit through a modification that may not just be technically infeasible to meet, it could be impossible to meet. Yet there's no remedy, there's no way to challenge it. You try to challenge it and you can't put on evidence, yet you're subject to a fine of $25,000 today. We think that's not what the legislature intended in Chapter 3704. We think that the Court of Appeals reasoning was correct, and we ask the court to affirm.
Counsel, the fugitive dust issue, if I understand your position here, you don't dispute that the director has authority to find a nuisance.
Correct.
Created by your fugitive dust, which lets him have some regulatory power.
Correct.
Because fugitive dust, without the finding of nuisance in this geographical area of the state, would not come under the director's authority to do anything.
Correct. And we do agree.
So you don't dispute that even though you're in a region of the state where fugitive dust can blow about without concern about the EPA, here a finding of nuisance was acceptable
to
your client?
Yeah, we agree that he has authority to do so. We factually disagree whether there was or was not one, but we do agree he has the authority to do so. However, in implementing that authority, he has to follow the statute.
I'm not familiar with Sandusky Dock. Where are they located geographically in relation to your facility?
Sandusky Dock, the marina, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, the marina is adjacent to the facility.
Which way?
To the
west.
Yeah, to the west.
So they would be downwind rather
they're
than
downwind,
up,
correct.
Rather than upwind.
Well, they're
correct.
Downwind when the wind's from the east, but they're upwind when the wind, which is usually from the west or southwest,
right.
Isn't that true?
Right.
So that makes them upwind.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the weather condition and the winds, and it would have been a very interesting hearing if we could have introduced all the evidence regarding the meteorological conditions, but that did not occur.
In fact, I wondered if you, is it, this probably doesn't have any bearing, but is it feasible for Sandusky Dock, or for technically feasible, to have the sprinkling system function only when the marina is downwind of the wind, the direction of the wind? In other words, when the wind's from the east or northeast or southeast, to have, because that's when the dust flows onto the marina. When it's from the southwest, it blows out into the bay or on somebody else's property.
Right. Yes. The way the system's set up, there's 38 cannons, and they all 38 could be used at a certain time. Some could be used at different times. So yes, it can be gauged and used consistent with the wind direction and the wind velocity.
EPA, I assume, did not consider that, as far as you know, having them operate only when it's necessary for them to operate.
Right. I mean, I think what they decided that these were reasonable available control measures, and they should be operated to decrease fugitive dust. Our difficulty is with the imposition of the 13-minute rule, which, with all the efforts we're talking about here, we think cannot be complied with in certain circumstances.
Counsel, just on another technical issue about this fugitive dust, in the wintertime when it's extremely cold, do you still have fugitive dust?
Usually not, because if the piles are frozen, I say usually not, because if the piles are frozen, there's not the dust. If they're loading or unloading ships, there may be dust, and in fact, the system is used year-round when needed.
How many minutes per hour is there fugitive dust, or how many does Sandusky emit?
We believe that in most situations, we are below that standard.
Below which standard?
The standard that was imposed was no more than 13 minutes in any 1 hour, and we believe we're below that.
But you're contesting the 13-minute per hour fugitive dust rule here.
Correct.
So how many minutes do you emit fugitive dust per hour?
Less than 13 usually, but it depends on the weather condition. For example, if it is a very bad storm off of Lake Erie, it may be substantially more than 13 minutes for 1 or 2 or 3 hour period during that storm. But usually the system, the way it's operated, can comply. But the problem is, the way the permit was written, you must comply always. There is no exception. So if you violate it once during one storm, that could be a fine of $25,000 a day.
Counsel, is it your position that reading the statute entirely, that there is always the duty to take into account technical feasibility and cost-benefit analysis?
Not always. I mean, okay. We think that only comes into play when you impose an emission limitation or you prohibit or you order the prohibition or the abatement of emissions. So not always. And there's many modifications of a permit even. Some modifications are just name changes. You know, there's situations where it's just not a factor. But where it does involve abatement or use of pollution control devices, in and of itself, that's involves technical feasibility and cost.
Which, in effect, would explain the reason that the language is in certain sections, that that's a requirement, and other sections it is not a requirement.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Yes.
Let me make sure I understand your argument. Is it your argument that the word or the first use of the word orders in R refers to includes permits?
Orders in R include orders, but they may include a permit under G, where it talks about the issuance of an order.
Is that how you get the connection between G and the complementary?
Correct. We think in this fact situation, the use of the word order in the last sentence of G refers to R, because the fact situation falls explicitly under that analysis. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Ms. Bry, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. As a dissenting judge on the Court of Appeals below recognized, because of the very nature of a public nuisance, the rules don't require the director to consider technical feasibility or economic reasonableness of the limitations he imposes, namely the 13-minute rule, which is what Sandusky is complaining about here. Once the nuisance finding goes on, the 13-minute rule applies as a matter of law. And in fact, a facility in, for example, in Cuyahoga County, just because of its location, if its permit were modified to include the 13-minute rule, they wouldn't be allowed to contest the 13-minute standard, just because it was modified and put in that permit. That's there, it's because of location. Here, it was because of the nuisance finding.
So the determination really is made by the director of the nuisance finding. Am I right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that is really what's at the core issue here, not the 13-minute emissions or the fugitive dust or anything else. It's really the determination that this is a public nuisance, and as a result, the 13-minute emission rule comes into effect.
That's correct, Your Honor. In conclusion, the General Assembly in 3704.03 gave the director two tools to address a facility's excessive air pollution. The director here used one of those tools, a permit modification, appropriately under the statute and under the rules. Accordingly, we urge the court to reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals.
Counsel, are you saying that the director was precluded from using Section R here?
No, Your Honor. We don't believe he's precluded. He had the choice of remedies, and he chose what he thought was the less onerous option because he thought the facility
So the decision or the issue that you just answered in the affirmative to Justice O'Donnell, that the agreeing that the only issue here is the naming of this activity as a nuisance, is not the only issue here. It's the response on behalf of the director to whether the utilization of G or are, and under what circumstances the chosen section of the statute was utilized.
It's correct, Your Honor, that the basis of the appeal is we believe the director correctly used G. He could have used G or R. In response to Justice O'Donnell's question, what I understood it to be was that the 13-minute rule, which is what Sandusky is complaining about, comes into play because of the nuisance finding. And so once that nuisance finding goes on, that standard
but
applies.
But that was not the only response that the director could have utilized, the imposition of the 13-minute rule under Section G.
He could have done an order under R if he had chosen to. Here he chose what he thought was a less onerous option under the permit modification provision.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rye. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise. You may be seated.